Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears along with you here on this Thursday, January the 13th, 2022, 1:13:22, 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Thank you for joining us today here on WWGH Radio. We have got a great morning show this morning. Want to give you a little preview of what's coming up here this morning on the program. 9:30 this morning, we'll be joined live by the amazing Kreskin. I'm sure you all remember the amazing Kreskin, world-famous mentalist who appeared on the Johnny Carson Show, the David Letterman Show. Sally Jesse Raphael has appeared all over the country. Author, best-selling author. He will be with us this morning at 9:30 a.m. to give us predictions for the year of 2022. And also, yesterday was Kreskin's birthday, and he made a big announcement that he'll make this morning at 9:30 a.m. Don't want to spoil it. So predictions for 2022 and the big announcement that Kreskin made yesterday on his 87th birthday. It's an interesting announcement. So 9:30 this morning. Coming up this morning at 8:40, we're going to be joined by Marion City School Superintendent Dr. Ron Arusi. A lot of moving parts over at Marion City Schools. The new school board was sworn in on Monday, and there was a big meeting, as well as a possible change to the mask policy due to COVID-19. Dr. Arusi will be along this morning at 8:40 to explain all that to us and explain why it happened and what's happening and how it impacts your children that might go to Marion City Schools. But we're going to kick off this morning with one of my favorite people, absolutely unquestionably one of my favorite people, who has a tie to Marion City Schools. The only person that I know of living who has a school named after them here in Marion. She served on all three branches of government, local here in Marion, state, Ohio, and national under President Bill Clinton, 40th Treasurer of the United States, Mary Ellen Withrow, who had a very interesting holiday season as it relates to the pandemic, but also a lot of things going on politically here in Marion and on the state level that we want to talk about. So it's always a pleasure to welcome via telephone Mary Ellen Withrow. Mary Ellen, how are you?
Oh, hi, Scott. I'm okay.
good to hear from you here this morning. I was just reading in the paper this morning that we're having a shortage here in Marion in COVID testing supplies. What have you made of the evolution of this pandemic?
Well, it's unreal, isn't it? Yes, I'm just getting over it. And in fact, several members of my family are getting over it as well. and it just seems like it's sort of exploded here in the last week or so.
You know, it's interesting, Mary Ellen. I think people are probably learning this for the first time this morning, but you had COVID-19 over the holidays, or right after, was it right after Christmas?
It was right after New Year's.
Right after New Year's.
Yeah.
When you got diagnosed with that, after all that we've heard about this, what did you think?
Well, I didn't get real sick. I had a lot of congestion, and I didn't feel very good. But I, of course, had had my shots and my booster, and I think that protected me. But anyway, I thought, you know, I don't know how I got it for sure, and I guess it was the Omicron, according to the doctor.
Mm. It's interesting because we keep hearing about it being dangerous for people over the age of 60 if you don't have the boosters or the vaccinations. So it's very important to get those.
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you think it would have been a different situation if you had not went in and got those?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm vulnerable, I guess, they tell me.
Is there any way for people to, if they're wondering if they have it, in the beginning, how did you feel?
I started coughing, and I felt I've had chills, and then the congestion, my voice, you couldn't have recognized my voice. It was way, way off. and a lot of coughing, and I just didn't feel good.
Now, the duration of the illness, how long did it last?
Well, I thought it was over after 5 days, but I can't go back into Primrose for 10 days because that's their rules, so I've been waiting. It'll be 10 days tomorrow, so I can go back then.
What has the isolation been like? A lot of people really worry about this.
Well, I've read 6 books, and I'm on my 7th book right now, and it's okay. I entertain myself pretty well.
You know, Mary Ellen, this has been going on nearly 2 years now. Did you ever think at this point with the vaccines and the booster shots and it being around for 2 years that this would be the time that you would get it?
No, you know, it just keeps going on and on and on. And I think we're all so tired of hearing about it and wishing it was over. I don't know if it'll ever be over.
You know, now that you're on the tail end of this and the tail end of isolation, what advice would you give to somebody who maybe doesn't have the vaccination, maybe might be facing a diagnosis of this themselves?
Well, I'd say wear a mask and be sure you wear a mask, you know, when you're out in public.
You know, the mask thing has become one of the biggest talking points in it. Do you understand why the mask has become such an issue for people?
Well, they don't like to wear them. That's the number one thing. It's an inconvenience, and it's a little harder to breathe, I think.
Well, we're very glad that you made it through this. You're feeling okay, and hopefully everything goes well from here on out.
Yes, I hope so.
Yeah. Well, Mary Ellen, just a little more on the pandemic here, because the National Guard was called into Marion General on Monday because of a lack of help that they were having. Did you ever think you would see the day in Marion, Ohio, where the National Guard had to be called in to help at the hospital?
No, I never expected that, and I hope they're helping out. I'm sure there's a lot of people that work at the hospital that have gotten it, and that would be a real problem. So, you know, I hope things go well at the hospital. I'm glad I didn't have to go there, I'll tell you that.
Mm. Are you surprised, as I say, the story this morning is that the kits are in short supply here in Marion right now to get diagnosed with COVID, the tests. Are you surprised that 2 years into something with a vaccine available and basically a booster available, that yet now is the time when we have the highest diagnoses of this pandemic?
Well, yes, it's all very surprising because, you know, the different types of COVID keep coming out and causing more trouble. I mean, if that hadn't happened, I think we would have been pretty much rid of it by now.
Did you find that there was a lot of fatigue with COVID?
Yes, yeah, you're not real spry.
I can understand. so you now have been told you had the Omicron variant.
Yes, right.
Obviously, we really don't know where we get it. Over the holidays, were you a little more active than you had been the previous year?
No, I don't think so. I wasn't. I was less active, I would say. You know, I have no idea where I got it from, whether it was at Primrose, because there's other people at Primrose that have it. And then, of course, in my family, there's other members of the family that have it. And so I'm not sure where I got it.
Having been fully vaccinated and boosted, were you surprised when you heard the diagnosis?
Yes, I was. I really was. I had had a test taken here at Primrose that said it was negative. And then the doctor called me the next day and said that I had another test taken over at Ohio Health, and theirs was positive. And so, yeah, it was a surprise. I didn't feel very good, but I thought, you know, after I had the negative test, I thought I was okay.
Does anything go through your mind when you hear the diagnosis? I know a lot of people get very, very worried.
No, I thought I was okay because I'd had all the shots and everything. I wasn't that sick, you know. I was concerned about my chest because I'd had pneumonia, but it was okay.
Here in Marion, we're still at 49% vaccinated, even with all the numbers that we've seen. In Marion County, do you have any reasoning for that, that we're not even halfway there yet?
No, I don't understand why people don't do it.
You would think if we were running out of testing supplies that the vaccination number might be higher.
Yes, right. I don't know. They keep telling people to do this, and why they don't do it, I don't know.
Well, we are very glad you're feeling okay again, Mary Ellen, and off restrictions tomorrow and able to go back to just normal life, I guess.
Yes, right.
Well, there are a few other things, Mary Ellen, since we had a chance to talk to you, that I wanted to talk to you about. You have already said that you support Nan Whaley and her run for governor this year of the state of Ohio on the Democratic side. And last week, she chose Cheryl Stevens as her lieutenant governor candidate. Cheryl is a Cuyahoga County Council member, CEO of the East Akron Neighborhood Development Corporation, and the former mayor of Cleveland Heights. Were you surprised by Nan Whaley's choice?
Not really. I don't know the person that she's chosen, but she sounds like she's perfectly capable of the job, and I imagine Nan has researched it pretty thoroughly before she chose her, so I'm sure she's a good choice.
There were two interesting positives and also two interesting criticisms I heard of this choice. And for people who don't know Cheryl Stevens, she's an African-American woman. And I heard last week, do you think there was any thought to the fact that this is an African-American woman, that maybe that's why the choice was made?
Oh, I don't know what all went into her consideration. I'm sure there were many things that she considered. I'm sure it was much thinking about all different directions on the individual. So I'm sure that it was well thought out.
You know, Mary Ellen, being obviously in politics for a long time, first woman on Elgin School Board, and you were courted back in the early 90s to run for governor here in Ohio, even though you chose to work in Washington. We still have never had a female governor here in Ohio, and putting two women on the ticket, do you think that's a good idea in a state that Donald Trump won overwhelmingly twice, and the Democrats have not won a gubernatorial election since Governor Strickland, close to 20 years ago now?
Well, all I can say is we'll find out. You know, it's going to be an interesting race. There's several people involved, and who knows what will happen. It's you know, when you get into politics, it's a step into the unknown, and that's exactly what it is. You don't know what's going to happen.
Do you understand why, have you ever been able to understand as a woman why people go into the voting booth and it seems to make a difference? Hillary Clinton has said she feels it makes a difference. Other politicians have said it makes a difference. Why, have you ever come to some kind of reasoning as to why it's harder to vote for a woman than a man?
Well, they don't think we're as capable. That's what it boils down to. And I had to fight that. I fought it all my way. And any woman that's in politics will tell you that.
Do you think in a state like Ohio, as opposed to maybe New York or California, which are a little more liberal at this point, do you think that will make it more difficult as a woman to run for office?
Well, Ohio has a strange, has taken a strange direction, and I can't understand really why. And so I just don't know, Scott. It's going to be tough no matter who wins it. It's going to be a tough race. I'll tell you who is a tough campaigner is DeWine, and I know that. I've watched him run for office in the many, many times that he's run, and he pulls out all the stops.
When it comes to Mike DeWine, Governor DeWine, he seems to be in a tough position with the primary just 5 months away now. He does have opponents, Joe Blystone and Jim Renacci, and it seems like, I don't think, our former President Trump has endorsed Renacci, but certainly seems more favorable to Renacci than DeWine. Do you think that could make a difference in this primary?
Oh, yes, I do. Yeah.
Where do you think DeWine made a mistake within his own party? Because his own party has taken away his power during the pandemic. Where was that mistake made?
Well, I think it all hinges back to the householder incident and all of that. I think that the whole Republican Party is in a disarray over that, and they should be.
You know, another big issue yesterday that came to the forefront here in Ohio is the redistricting. And,
yes.
Well, we learned yesterday that the map that was drawn up last year, I believe last September, is not going to be accepted. The Ohio Supreme Court has said that's not exactly what the voters voted for. Where do you see this going?
Well, I'll tell you, that's been the problem. The different divisions all through the state have all helped the Republican Party. And it was supposed to have been more equalized, and it wasn't.
When did things in Ohio start to become so Republican as far as districts? When did that happen? When did the Democrats lose control of that idea?
Well, I think probably it really wasn't a factor until the last election. I think that's when I would say that it really has been definite. But before that, it could go either way.
Do you think it's possible for Democrats to win in certain areas the way this map is drawn now?
Well, no. The ones that are stabilized in their areas will win, I'm sure, like Marcy Kaptur and the people that are have been there a long time, but it's going to be difficult.
You know, Mariella, we got about 4 minutes left here, and we just celebrated the one-year anniversary or commemoration of the January 6th Capitol riots. What did you make of all of the commemoration ceremonies, the speech of President Biden last week on January the 6th? What did you make of all the news coverage?
Oh, I thought his speech was very, very good. I was glad to hear him say what he should be saying, and I hope the committee will be successful in what they're trying to do. They're trying to get people to come and testify, and they're refusing to do that, and there's laws that should take care of that. I just hate to see the thing being treated like it didn't amount to anything when it was really a terrible situation.
You know, it's kind of interesting on the front page. I can't remember if it was the Dispatch yesterday, but on a lot of newspapers, there was a story concerning our congressman in this district, Jim Jordan, that he is refusing to cooperate with the January 6th committee. Does that surprise you in any way?
No, it doesn't surprise me.
What do you make of it? Used to be that when you were asked by Congress or a higher office to cooperate with an investigation, you did it. Now people I'm not going to do it.
That's right. And I don't know how they can get away with it, because they have to be within the law. They're not when they do that.
Why is nothing ever done legally?
Well, I think they're afraid of Trump, and I think he's behind most of it. That seems to be the situation.
It's a fascinating thing, because people can just turn down subpoenas now. They can refuse to turn over documents. I don't know how anybody could ever be arrested anymore when this precedent's being set.
I know.
Did you ever think, back when you were in Washington in the early 2000s, late 90s, that we would ever get to a place like this?
No, I never thought I'd see that. I thought our government was protected by having three divisions and a Supreme Court. And then I lost confidence in the Supreme Court when the Bush-Gore decision was made, because I said, you can't tell me it's not political. And it's definitely political, and it shouldn't be. But anyway, the whole situation is a shock to see this happen. And the fact that I don't think the Justice Department's doing enough. They should be in there. They may be doing it, and we don't know, but it doesn't seem evident to me that there's a lot being done from their standpoint.
Mary Ellen, with about 2 minutes left, what do you think should happen to our congressman or because of this refusal?
They should be voted out of office. And before that, they should be whatever legally can be done, it should be done. But we should be looking at these people that are refusing to acknowledge the last election, and they should not be reelected into their office when they're standing up and lying about something the way they are.
You have given your opinion on Jim Jordan many times. In this particular incident, how do you feel about this man who holds office in our district?
Well, I have been hoping that he would be defeated every time he ran, and that's how I feel.
As a human being, do you have any take on him?
Well, I think he's in love with his power. I think that's part of his problem. I think he's knows some things at when he was at Ohio State that he should have been more honest about, and he's got a lot of baggage.
final question, Mary Ellen. It's interesting. The State of the Union address is usually always held in January. I think it's been that way since 1934, I was reading. This year, Joe Biden's first State of the Union address will not take place until March. And a lot of people are speculating it's to try to get some of these bills passed so he has something to talk about by March. What did you make of the postponement of the State of the Union? And do you think he can get anything done by March the way the political system is right now?
Well, I don't know. It depends on Joe Manchin and the gal from Arizona. I tell you, they're a pair.
Is it surprising to you that right now, I mean, I understand it's slim margins, but the Democrats control both branches of government, well, all branches of government at this point, and yet nothing can get passed, nothing can get done?
Because we've got two Democrats that aren't doing what they should do. That's the reason.
Well, Mary Ellen, it's always great to hear from you. I hope we can have you back in the studio soon when you're back off of isolation. And I'm so glad to hear you're feeling well. I'm really glad to hear that. And I hope we can talk again soon.
Oh, I hope so too, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Mary Ellen. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
Mary Ellen Withrow, 40th Treasurer of the United States. Now, that's interesting that she had a bout with COVID-19, which so many people have. That certainly is not unique to society. Mary Ellen, of course, 40th Treasurer of the United States, and has two schools named for her in Marion, and we were just glad to have her on via telephone this morning to catch up on all the political comings and goings. Now, for the next 18 minutes this morning, we are going to continue to talk here about a big local issue with the school system, Marion City Schools, and masks and COVID and so on and so forth. We had Superintendent Dr. Ron Arusi on, I believe it was early last week, when the students returned from winter break. At that point, there was no mask mandate. At that point, we didn't really know what was going to happen. We knew that levels were high here in Ohio, and now we're learning this morning that apparently there's a kit shortage here in Marion in regard to COVID-19. And last week, the health department ran out of testing supplies, and of course, the National Guard came to the hospital on Monday, and I believe there is going to be an update to the COVID-19 policy, and there have been some things going on here in the Marion City School District that we want to catch up with and get informed on with Superintendent Dr. Ron Arusi. Dr. Arusi, good to hear from you.
Hey, good morning, Scott. Glad to be with you again, as always.
Yeah. Dr. Arusi, can you kind of take us through the last 10 days since we spoke? What has been going on in regard to the pandemic in Marion City Schools?
Yeah, it's a good question, Scott. Again, we monitor our cases on a daily basis. When we got back from winter break last week, we actually, we had some students that did not return because they were on quarantine. Obviously, much of the community spread is happening at home. We aren't seeing a great deal or really any evidence that there is community spread within the schools, and that's always a good thing. And I think that there's enough research out there that says, that the likelihood of kids spreading the disease is, although it's capable and it is possible, it's far less than what we're seeing with adults as far as spread is concerned. So, but we continue to monitor that. I think though this week and last week we were fairly consistent with where we were before we left for winter break. Obviously, there was concerns over that, but we wanted to see the effect of some of those, the winter break and all of course, all of the gatherings and things like that. So just this week, we have started to see quite an uptick in our student cases. We continue to monitor our staff cases on a regular basis. I mean, we feel very good about our staff and that. We believe, we don't know for a fact, but we believe that over 80% of our staff has been vaccinated and possibly boosted as well. So We're very fortunate and pleased that our staff is well protected here in relation to the vaccine. But we are starting to see an uptick in cases with our students. We're probably about the level that we started school with at the beginning of the year, which is really what, encouraged us to have a mask mandate. So we will go back to our mask mandate for all students and adults. We should have, in Marion here, we do struggle at times with our students bringing their masks to school, especially those that don't ride a bus. So we have to, as many things in related to COVID, our PPE with our masks have been in short supply. We expect to get about 20,000 of those. By the end of the day today, we can get them distributed to the schools tomorrow. So when the students come back, we have a professional development day on Tuesday for our teachers. So the students will return on Wednesday. So when they return, all K through 12 students and staff members will wear masks. We don't require masks for preschool students. That's based on CDC recommendations, but we do encourage those students who are capable of, that are in preschool to wear a mask. So that was a long answer, Scott, but that's where we're at today.
Well, it's interesting, Dr. Arusi, because when we spoke last week about this, you said one of the main factors in this was a staff shortage. And we know that every business on the face of the earth right now, it seems like, needs help. They're in a lack of help. Has there been any staff shortages in Marion City Schools in the last 2 weeks since you've been back open?
Yeah, actually there has. And so, the trend across the United States and even more specifically here in Ohio, especially for districts like ours that have multiple buildings, before I even make the statement, we are all committed here in Marion City Schools to keeping our kids in school as much as possible. So that is our top priority. We want to keep kids in school. That is part of the safety of our students because, we know that when we've learned from the past couple years that our students not having the ability to socialize and be with their friends and have that, routine has a mental effect on many of our students. So we're committed to keeping our kids in school as much as possible, given, whatever the pandemic brings to us. So we are on a school-by-school, classroom-by-classroom basis, monitoring those cases. If we have staffing shortages like we did at Taft Elementary, I believe was Monday and Wednesday this week, we had to close Taft. We closed the building, but we switched to our remote learning model. That's due to staffing. So I believe we had 10 teachers out at Taft on Monday. We did have a few come back, so we were able to go back to school on Tuesday. By Tuesday evening, we had about 3 or 4 other teachers that either, it's not necessarily the staff that are contracting COVID, but, if staff's family members have COVID, many of our teachers have young children or other adults within the family, then they are caregivers, so they have to take that time off. So, again, we monitor that. My principals check in with us every day when we see what we're getting as far as call-offs or, maybe some staff that have shown some symptoms and have to leave. That's how we make that determination. So I know that, and I sent a message out to our families, and I want to encourage our families just to have Plan B on the shelf in case we have to go remote. There are times when we don't know what our staffing levels are going to be till sometimes, 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. So we try to make that decision. It's almost like a snow day, really. We can't predict what that's going to be, but we have to be reactive to that situation.
Did you ever think we would be back here in January after the start of the school year last year and basically the run we had through winter break last year, December?
Yeah, I mean, if you recall, last year we were, for the most part of the year, we were in that hybrid model. And, I think that as we learn more about the virus and more about the transmission of the virus, I think we're better prepared, and some of the protocols that we had before, we've determined that really aren't as effective. The virus is an airborne virus, And although we, you know, we continue to use cleaning protocols and we try to social distance whenever, but it is an airborne virus. So, you know, from last year to this year, we've had a lot to, you know, think about. But one thing's for sure is it doesn't matter what we think or where we're headed, because, you know, that's out of our control. And so to answer your question, no, I didn't think we would be here at all, especially, you know, after the summer and coming back into this school year. I felt like, I mean, we were averaging, you know, one or two cases per day there. We got up again to 18, 19 cases per day with our students at the beginning of the year. That's why we decided at the beginning of the year that the mask mandate was appropriate for that level of transmission. We are back to that right now, and that's why we made the determination to go back to the mask mandate. That will last until the end of January. My fingers are crossed that, you know, we'll start to see a downward trend. I believe that that's starting to happen already, and hopefully that continues. And so we'll continue to reevaluate that on a regular basis. But, you know, the other questions are, I think, you know, some parents and families have asked, you know, what are we doing? What specifically do we do in relation to COVID? So we are still cleaning all of our high touch areas. So, you know, if there's a doorknob, you know, we don't typically use water fountains anymore, but anywhere there's high touch areas, we clean them. If we do have a confirmed case in a certain area, then we have those, I don't even know what the name of them call. I call them Ghostbuster machines, where you go in with the backpacks and spray everything down and disinfect that way. So we're continuing to use our safety and cleaning protocols. You know, the mask mandate has been the one that we have kind of adjusted accordingly. We know that's an effective way in high transmission as well as another part of our protocol. So we are still cleaning on a regular basis. We are still trying to social distance whenever we can. But we, again, are trying to make sure we're providing the education necessary for all of our students to succeed.
You know, Dr. Arusi, when the school year started, there was a big hubbub made because Marion City Schools was the first district in this area to make a mask mandate. Mm-hmm. I know it's a fresh thing as of yesterday, and this morning a lot of people are hearing about this. Do you think, is there a hubbub? Has there been any conjecture about going back to the masks starting next Wednesday?
Well, you know, the only way I can monitor that situation is, you know, we monitor our social media, and there are people who will respond. I put out a video yesterday up on our Facebook page, you know, about us going back to the mask mandate, and we do get comments. I'm looking at my phone as the message light is blinking, and I'm sure there will be messages there about, you know, masks. You know, Scott, there's no question that we have quite a large faction within our community that encourage us to wear masks. I have gotten many emails from staff and families about, you know, monitoring the rate of transmission and encouraging us to consider our mask mandate again, but I also, on the other side, have a large faction that do not believe that masks are effective and that they actually hamper the educational process. And so, you know, we just try to, I think we've tried to develop some consistency about how we go about making some of those decisions. When we have high transmission rates and we see larger numbers of students being affected and not being in school, that's when we have to change our protocol. I mean, we did really well up until the winter break with our mask recommendation at that point, but it was related to community spread as well. There wasn't as much community spread, and so we went to the mask optional but recommended policy, and we did well. We did not see a large transmission rate, and that's, you know, that's the key to us, is what are we seeing within our buildings, within the classroom. So there's as much research out there about masks as there is, you know, that maybe masks might not be as effective. But, you know, we feel like mask wearing at certain points in time is necessary based on what we're seeing in the community. And I think we're at that level again. And that's why I had a conversation with the board on Monday. We looked at our supply of masks. We needed to make sure we have all those masks available for our students. And I hope, my hope is that, you know, the transmission rate falls, and by the end of January, I would love to see us go back to a mask optional policy once again.
We've got about 5 minutes left here with Dr. Ron Arusi, superintendent of the Marion City Schools. You know, I think about the masks, and I think about all the buildings and all the students in Marion City Schools and younger kids and wearing the masks. Is there a large cost involved in a mask mandate?
Yeah, there's no. Well, we've been fortunate. We've had a lot of folks. You know, the Central Ohio Educational Service Center has really helped us, and we get, you know, when they get a supply of masks, we actually get those. We're eligible to get those for free. They distribute those on a per pupil basis. But lately, because there's been a shortage that way, we did have to order masks. So yeah, I think over the past year. I think my treasurer and I figured out that we probably just in PPE alone have spent almost a little over $400,000.
Since the beginning of this year.
Yeah. Since the end of the pandemic going in with just the purchase of equipment to sanitize and all of those kinds of things, that's what we spend. We have to keep track of that and report that due because we have money coming from the federal government to help us pay for that.
Dr. Arusi, we have about 3 minutes left, and you mentioned the school board meeting on Monday. And it's kind of interesting because I believe this was the first school board meeting with two new school board members who were elected last November. And we have seen things written up in the Star, I believe, by one of these school board members about discipline and things of that nature. How did the first meeting go?
You know, it was nice. We welcomed our two new board members. Scott Weibling and Rocky Ratliff were sworn in. We did have an organizational meeting. Unfortunately, we had one of our board members was not able to attend that meeting. And so, we went through our organizational meeting. We did not elect a president at that point in time, and we're going to have to do that, president and vice president. There was differences of opinions on some of those issues. But, you know, and both of our new school board members bring obviously some new perspectives to that. And so, you know, we're really looking forward to having these conversations. I know Mr. Weibling is really concerned about discipline and those types of things. We've already had some conversations about that, and really looking forward to sitting down with him one-on-one and having those conversations about his viewpoints on discipline. As a former teacher, he brings that perspective to the board. And so we're, you know, really looking forward to having that open dialogue about, you know, what's happening and getting that different perspective as we develop our policies. And that's one of the, you know, that's one of the functions of school board members is to develop policies. I know Mr. Ratliff is very concerned about spending and what we're spending on, and as well, all board members should be concerned about that. They have a responsibility, and we all have a responsibility to be fiscally responsible. And so, you know, we are going to listen to those perspectives and continue on, and hopefully we're, you know, all on the same page in relation to we need to do what's best for the students and the families within this community, and we'll have good conversations about the direction and how that will take place.
You know, Dr. Arusi, here before we have to break, when somebody goes to the media like that with a newspaper article before they even assume the position in regard to discipline in Marion City Schools, and it gets a front page story, which all the community reads and looks at and shares on social media, do you think that's helpful in the grand scheme of things?
Well, I think I would like to see, and I've always lived by the idea that I think the two-way communication is the most effective means of communication. And so I always would encourage anybody, and I've always said this, Scott, as you well know, I have an open door policy, and I would be more than willing to have conversations with anybody about those issues. I think that's the best way to have dialogue so that we can, you know, present all aspects of an issue and get perspective from everybody involved. I would prefer that, but everybody has a right to communicate whatever way they want to. And so, you know, when I get the chance to respond to that as the Marion Star, I appreciate their willingness to talk to us as the administration about where we currently are with discipline. And we certainly have some issues, and I thought there was some good information that got out to our communities about what we're doing about discipline and really the effect of what the pandemic has had on our students' social-emotional issues. So, you know, I would prefer anybody who has any issues to give me a call or set up an appointment or meet with any of our principals if it's a building issue. You know, but everybody has a right to communicate however they wish to.
If you're just tuning in, well, I do want to let everybody know Marion City Schools will go back to a mask mandate after the long weekend for the Martin Luther King holiday and the Staff Development Day next Tuesday, starting next Wednesday. And it's always a pleasure to talk with Marion City Schools Superintendent Dr. Ron Arusi. Dr. Arusi, the door is always open here. Thank you so much for coming on.
As always, thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate you.
Stay well. Bye-bye.
You too.
Dr. Ron Arusi, okay, there's your latest news. Back in about 15 minutes.
Right, too, because I just cannot get over that he's doing this. It makes no sense.
Well, he said, and this is his quote, he said, most,